Hey everyone, welcome to the Sustain the Range podcast. I'm Lauren, your host, and this podcast is a personal exploration of my experiences in everything ranching. From beef operations to training horses to sustainable farming and regenerative practices, we'll cover it all. Each episode features enlightening conversations with guests who bring their unique perspectives and expertise. Whether they're seasoned ranchers or first-generation farmers, we all share a common bond and deep appreciation for the land and the livestock we raise. Tune in each week for engaging discussions, inspiring stories, and practical insights from the ranching community. And let's embark on this incredible journey together. Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of Sustain the Range podcast. In this episode, I had the privilege of talking with Brittany Miller, a true powerhouse in her field. Brittany's list of accomplishments is impressive, including features on Ride TV's Cowgirls Champion, two-time TBRA Champion, two-time Iron Woman Champion, and the 2018 Texas High Money winner. Brittany's passion has taken her across the world, where she shares her expertise in horse training and in ranch bronc riding through her women's ranch bronc riding clinics and workshops. Brittany didn't grow up riding horses, and her affinity for horse training blossomed when she began working with an abused mule, sparking her interest in natural horsemanship and ultimately leading to get on her first bronc at the age of 21. Her story is an example of resilience and determination, proving that one doesn't need a ranch upbringing or agricultural background to succeed. Brittany's contributions to women in rodeo and beyond are truly inspiring. I hope you guys enjoy this conversation as much as I did. Let's dive in. All right. Well, thanks, Brittany, for jumping on this podcast with me. I'm really excited to talk to you about your experience in your ranch bronc riding school and all of your experience in training horses and everything. So I really appreciate you coming on, and it's great to have you here.
Yeah, thank you. Sorry, I'm sick.
Yeah, no, that's okay. I appreciate you coming on while you're sick. So, but we can hear you okay. And it's all good. So thank you. So I just want to give you a chance, you know, to kind of introduce yourself a little bit, introduce, you know, kind of where you're from, where you grew up, what your background is, and, you know, kind of your journey into horses and agriculture.
So I'm from a lot of different places. I call Dillon, Montana home. But I am from a lot of places, born in California, and then we lived in Washington and then Missouri. I moved to Montana when I was 17 and went to college in Dillon, and then I bounced around a lot after that and kind of ended up here in Billings now. But when people ask me where I'm from, I never really know what to say. But when I rodeo and they put a "what's your hometown," it's always been Dillon for 10 years. It's Dillon's my home. But I have been in Billings now for 6 years.
So how did you kind of get into horses? Did you grow up riding? Did you get into them a little bit later in life? And, you know, kind of what's your journey there?
I didn't really grow up around it. I've always loved horses, but I used to go to a barn and clean stalls for a 1 hour lesson and tried to get my foot in the door that way. And I fell in love with an abused mule, actually. And the changes that I created in him through training and trust and all that kind of stuff kind of inspired me to look more into the horsemanship side of things, and ended up finding a college in Dillon, Montana that had a bachelor degree in natural horsemanship. And so that's where I left high school and went to college here. And I have a bachelor of science in natural horsemanship, and kind of just took off from there, but it all started with a mule.
What was kind of the process for you, kind of training that mule, like as an abused animal? You know, I know that can be tough sometimes, especially if you're kind of new at it too.
Well, and he was older too. He was like 15 or something. So he was pretty well, the trauma was ingrained into him, but, you know, extremely head shy. He had pieces missing out of his ear from being twitched and absolutely hated men. And so that took 2-3 years for him to trust me, and it was just slow. He bucked me off quite a bit. Like, he didn't know how to lope. He just ran off everywhere. And I don't know why. I was just that crazy girl that liked the challenge and I mean, he kicked me quite a bit because he wasn't good with picking up his back feet. I mean, he beat the hell out of me, but I kept him back.
Yeah.
And I just like seeing the fear turn into trust. You could see it in his eyes. He started to get really kind and started to trust people. But I mean, he still had his trauma that needed to work through, and he wasn't ever going to get over it being as old as he was. But I liked that mental process that he undertook, that change that he made from not trusting people to actually giving him a chance again. So it was that psychology, that horse's psychology, that I wanted to know more about.
Yeah, that's amazing. And actually, one of your posts that I had read, and I actually copied it down and wanted to ask you about it a little bit later on, but since you've kind of been bringing up now your motivations behind training and things like that, but you kind of wrote, it was something about one of your horses that you were training at the time, but you said, "Horses become so much easier to read and understand when we let our walls down to truly know how a horse thinks. You have to know how to feel with both your mind and your heart. And the only problem is we keep getting in the way. You know, control your emotions and just breathe." And I just really loved that because I thought it was such an incredible description of like the bond and connection that you can have on the horse when you take the time to truly understand and really listen, you know, to what they're trying to tell you. So I just wanted to kind of dig into that a little bit of like kind of what led you to that belief and how you got to that point in your training. Cause not everybody has, you know, that belief. I think there's a lot more people obviously that are coming around to that, but could you just kind of talk a little bit more about that and kind of how it led to, you know, your horsemanship?
So a lot of that with your emotions and how your emotions are directly related to being able to read a horse too. Anybody can read a horse physically, you know, and react to the way they react. But to understand horses emotionally, you have to, you know, be empathetic. You have to understand what they're going through, how they see, how they think. A lot of people say they understand a horse's think, but they say that because they watch the way they react. And that's not always true. There's more to reading a horse than just how they react. It's how are they thinking? What experiences did they go through that makes them think this way? But to be compassionate, you have to stop thinking about yourself and thinking about other people and the animals. And so that's kind of where that post came from, is letting down your walls. Like, are you angry today? Are you focused on whatever's going on in your personal life? Is it directly affecting your relationship with your horse? Because I mean, my horses are really good at picking up my energy and my feel, but that is also their entire body language. That's their entire language, is feel, and because they don't communicate. So horses are really good at picking up energy like that. And so when they react to me and my energy, it's just kind of a big slap in the face. It's like, okay, like stop, take a deep breath. Like, you know, you gotta control your emotions because it's affecting the way that this horse is being trained, and everything that you're doing with that horse, that colt, you know, while you're training him in that 30 days, that's going to be a direct reflection of how he's going to act down the road. It's going to be built into his foundation. So that's kind of what that post was about too, is when you're starting a colt and teaching him the foundations and basics of life, if your emotions are involved and you're dealing with your personal life, you're just transferring that into his foundation, and that's how he's going to react the rest of his life. So it's kind of a direct relationship.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I know for me, I've had a huge learning lesson on controlling emotions, you know, when you get around that horse and you pick the day, okay, I'm going to do this, this, and this today, you know, for training session. And then it's like, you get in there and it could completely change. And controlling emotions piece has been such a huge thing that I've had to really tap into to make sure that I'm aware of like what I'm bringing to this horse. So are there certain things that you do, you know, before you kind of enter into that training session, you know, before you get on that horse, are there certain things that you do to kind of help you control your emotions or kind of get into the mindset? Or even, you know, just in your everyday life, like controlling our emotions are huge, you know, for so many different reasons and for our relationships and things like that.
I always, and it takes a lot of mental practice to do this, but I always take a couple deep breaths and I tell myself, okay, this horse doesn't deserve whatever you're going through. He doesn't need it. It's not his responsibility to take care of your emotions. You got to come in with a clean slate, like drop everything you're doing. This horse doesn't deserve to be the punching bag of whatever you're going through. So let's start over, you know, and be kind to him. You know, and horses are no different than dogs. Same thing. People treat dogs way better than they treat horses, but they're the same animal, essentially. You know, there's no reason for a horse to rely on us. They can do it themselves. There's no reason for dogs to rely on us. They can take care of themselves, but they do it anyway because we ask them to. And so I remind myself that this horse doesn't deserve all the negative shit that I'm going through, that I have to do better for him.
Yeah, that's amazing. And what a like testament to you as a trainer and, you know, a person to just be able to approach it in that way, because, you know, there are a lot of people and there's a lot of people that I think, you know, unfortunately that might say that. And then you get into the ring and, you know, or, you know, the round pen, whatever, you get on that horse and it just all goes out the window. You know, it's like all of your stuff comes back to you. And I think we've all been victim of it too. You know, there's times I've lost my patience that I look back now and I'm like, oh man, you know, I'm not proud of that moment, you know? So we've all had.
Either. I mean, I've lost my emotions before too. And that's the cool thing about horses. They're super, super forgiving. And, you know, but it does take a lot of practice to do that and just clear your mind and zone out and just focus on what you're doing with that horse and making it a good experience for him. And that's what I tell myself too, like, make this a good experience because he's always going to remember it. Then when you come back the next day, he'll pick up on that positive experience that you left off on.
Yeah, absolutely. A lot of your Instagram about, you know, self-development and mindset and discipline. So I'd love to kind of, you know, talk about that a little bit too. And you seem like a really confident person, and we'll talk about a little bit how you started some different businesses and your ranch bronc riding school for women, and which is just super cool. Have you kind of always been on the journey of like self-development? Have you always felt like a very confident person, or have there been kind of things in your life that have led you to kind of where you are right now in terms of that?
And that's funny. Everyone always says, oh, you're so confident. And I'm like, me, I did not grow up confident at all. Like grew up a very insecure person. And it wasn't until I started riding ranch broncs that I developed into my confidence. And that's why I liked riding broncs and why I still do, because it creates confidence. You can't ride broncs and rodeo and compete as hard in the rodeo season if you're insecure, passive. Like, you got to be aggressive, you got to be confident, you got to know what you want, chase some goals, get it done, kind of thing. And that's the grit that's deep down inside you as a human. We've all got confidence, we just don't know it yet. But I did not grow up that way. I have developed into who I am now, but it took years to get that way too.
Yeah. If you can think back, for instance, you said that, you know, Bronx really kind of helped you develop that confidence and stuff. Were there certain points in your life where you were kind of like, you know what, I'm done. Like, I can't do this. I can't give up, or I'm going to give up. And then, you know, what propelled you forward to kind of keep going?
I think that's just my personal sense of grit. I've never been the type to give up that easily just because I like proving people wrong. Mm-hmm. I mean, shoot, when I first started, I sucked. Like, I needed to practice. I wasn't very good at it. I didn't have a coach. I didn't have a mentor. Like, everything that I had to learn, I learned on my own through trial and error, through mistakes, through watching other people and having guys make fun of me and stuff like that. And so it took me twice as long to get where I'm at because I was my own support, my own teacher, my own mentor. And that's hard to have all that pressure on yourself on top of everything you're doing in your personal life, on top of trying to have a career, et cetera. And so riding broncs, I was like, you suck, but you gotta, you know, you gotta show them that you can do this. And it was more just trying to show the guys that I was good enough to compete with them. And that was just kind of my own motivation. Like, oh, there was, they didn't all suck. There was a lot of them that encouraged me, and we got to be good friends and help me along. And a lot of them wanted to see me do better, and I wanted to see myself do better. But that's a lot of, it's just that that's who I am. That's my personality that comes out, that kept pushing me to get better at riding. But there was a lot of times where I was like, I just can't do this on my own anymore. Like, I want a travel partner. I want somebody to push me. I want somebody to help me. But I still, to this day, have never had it. I've always had to be my own support.
That really says a lot about you and your character. A lot of people, if they've got a dream or, you know, something that they really want to pursue, they're really afraid. And I know I was stuck in this position, you know, for years, where you want to start something, you want to go do something, but you're afraid to suck at it first. And that sometimes stops people, you know, from pursuing things, because you don't want to look bad. You want to go into there and jump in and be perfect and feel like you know everything. So can you talk a little bit about that too, or even just some advice you'd give to people, you know, they feel they're afraid of that failure at first?
Yeah, because when I first started, I really sucked at it. But like, I guess I was so hyper focused on being good in like to keep practicing that I never had time to think about what other people thought of me. I was just so focused on myself and trying to be good at what it was I put my mind to. And so I didn't have time to think about that negative quality about not, you know, being good enough right away, because nobody is. Like, no, the people that are talented, it's because they practice. It's perfected practice. That's what creates talent. Yeah, sure, somebody might have a natural ability, but any kind of sport, anything that you do in life is a roller coaster. You might be good at it at first, but then you're going to create some bad habits and go downhill again, and then you'll come back up on the roller coaster and get real good at it again, and then you'll make a mistake and go back down. Like, and that rodeo is a really good example of that. Rodeo is a roller coaster. Nobody's good just all the time, flatline. Like, you have ups and downs, and the same with anything in life too. But as far as like being afraid to make mistakes, if that's all you're focusing on, then you're not focusing on the right thing. That's the wrong quality, because if you focus on the right stuff, about just being good, bettering yourself as a person and practicing the sport that you're doing, you don't have time to focus on that negative quality.
Yeah. Yeah. That's some great advice. What was it like for you being a woman rodeo in the, you know, competition that you're in, you know, riding Bronx and even just, you know, rodeo in general? Could you talk a little bit about that and, you know, maybe some challenges that you might have come across with the Bronc riding and stuff that you mentioned, what it was like as a woman, because you don't really see many women jumping on a Bronc. So, and competing at it.
When I first started in 2012, I researched as much as I could. There was maybe 5 girls that rode Bronx out here in the Western states. Like, there just wasn't a thing. It's not that it's not allowed, but so when I first started, I went down the rabbit hole. I entered every damn rodeo I could find that would let me ride. Looking back, that was not the best way to learn, because I was getting on horses I had no business getting on. They were too much for me, but I didn't know that because I didn't have a mentor. I didn't have anybody to help teach me. It was all everything I learned on my own. So when I first started, I didn't really have any problems. Nobody gave me shit for it. They were just like, you know, you want to ride Bronx, you're going to have to do better than that. Like, you're not riding very good. You're making all these mistakes. And so then I used to carry all that negativity with me to the next one until I learned how to stop doing that. But as far as, I don't really have any problems, I guess, riding bucking horses as a woman. Nobody really said anything. So nobody said anything positive. Nobody said anything negative. They was just like, oh yeah, she's riding Bronx. And then she was starting to do really good at it. And, I don't know. It's just kind of something nobody talked about. Yeah. And then now, after that TV show with Ride TV and Cowgirls, I can probably count about 400 women who have been on a bucking horse in the last 6 years. So now it's starting to become a thing. It's still very, very slow going because there's a lack of consistency with these women and entering and competing, traveling and all that stuff. But it's going slowly, just like women's breakaway roping. It's evolving and it's trying, but we have a long ways to go as far as women riding bucking horses. And of course, being a woman, we have a higher expectation, you know, in and out of the arena and stuff like that compared to a guy. But when I started, I didn't really have any problems like that. I was just the crazy girl who was getting on Bronx and trying to do good at it and sucked here, but did good there. And just kind of, I don't know, I wasn't afraid to get on anything because the worst that's going to happen is they're going to buck and I'm going to ride it, or they're going to buck and I'm going to fall off. Like,
yeah,
I never cared.
Yeah.
I just wanted good.
What was the motivation behind getting on a bronc? Like, what was the thing that made you say, like, I want to ride Bronx?
So I've always wanted to rodeo, but I wasn't a confident enough roper to do that in front of people. Mm-hmm. I didn't want a barrel race. It just wasn't my thing. And I've always admired bucking horses, you know, and there ain't no different than riding a colt in a round pen that bucks and stuff. And it's kind of fun and, you know, whatever. And I'm never scared. I was never scared of a bucking horse. Like I said, you're either going to stay on or you're not. There's really nothing to be scared of. You already know what's going to happen. And so when I saw a women's ranch bronc in Idaho, just south of Dillon where I was at, it's like, oh, I can rodeo and I can make money riding a horse that bucks. Like, that's pretty cool. And it was and I'd never heard of ranch broncs before. Obviously, everyone knows what saddle bronc is, but ranch broncs is like, it's your everyday saddle. It's like, I'm literally saddling a bucking horse with my saddle and then I ride it and make money. I was like, that's easy. Like, I can do that. And at that time, I was trying to prove to myself that if I say I can do it, I'm going to do it. And then if I'm going to do it, I'm going to go all in. I don't like half-assing anything. Like, if I'm going to do something, I'm going to get good at it. And I'm going to learn how to do it inside and out. And it just lit a fire, like, deep down in who I am. It's rooted into my personality, into my character. And then it just blew up and I went everywhere, didn't care about being broke as long as I could go to a rodeo. Like, it was like a drug. I needed that addiction. It was, had to enter a rodeo, and it was so good for me socially because I didn't grow up with a lot of friends, and was pretty awkward and hated making friends anyway, just because I never know what to do or say. And so rodeo was more than just a confidence boost. It was really good socially for me too.
Yeah. Yeah. It sounds like you learned a lot from it, and your mental toughness really grew a lot from those experiences, you know, which is amazing. So I would love for you to talk a little bit about your, you know, ranch riding school and kind of how that started, where you got the idea from it, you know, that said that you wanted to put on these clinics, and if you could just talk a little bit about that.
So I never really wanted to do this.
Okay.
When I first started, there was only a handful of us girls that did it, and half of them only did it once a year at their hometown, whatever. You know, and then as the years got on, there was more girls wanting to do it when the TV show came out, and I was getting really irritated because they were trying to do it for the wrong reasons and just for the attention and the glamour and not actually learning how to do it, you know, based on the tradition, based on, you know, the horsemanship side of things. Like, and I was just kind of not really into it. And none of the girls would listen to me, and, you know, they didn't want to learn. They didn't want to be better. And it was driving me crazy. And I'm like, why would I go out of my way to teach all these girls and then they're just not going to listen to me anyway? Well, then more years go by and I kept getting more messages like, how do I get started? I really want to do this. And I got tired of messaging 50 girls a year about the same things, like, how do I get started? Like, you have any videos and stuff like that? And I'm like, you know what? Let's just pick one spot and y'all can come here together and I'll just explain it once and you're done. And then you can go off and like prove to me that you can go off on your own, compete and travel and enter and show up and actually represent the sport the way it's supposed to be. And not just do it for the photos and the social media bragging rights and stuff like that. And so I tried my best to get one going actually here in Montana. Nothing would ever work out. I'm like, all right, it's not meant to be. And then I actually saw a Bronx school in France. And I was just being crazy. I'm like, yeah, screw it. I'll just go to France and watch. And like, I didn't even know they had rodeos in Europe. And so I called the number. And I'm like, can I just come watch? And they're like, no, we know who you are. Like, you're going to teach Ranch Bronx here. And I'm like, what? Like, I don't want to do that. And so my first school officially was in France in 2020. And there was actually a woman who entered the school and she kicked everyone's butt. Like, she rode so well. And I'm like, okay, like, that was really cool. And then I came back 2 months later and taught another one in the same place in France. And when I brought over a buckle and we made it a big rodeo and it was so much fun, and she ended up winning. She outrode the guys. I'm like, okay, like, I can probably do this. And then tried again to get one in the States. Wouldn't work out. Nobody wanted to do that. I'm like, okay, all right, maybe that just died. And I got a call for Canada. So I went up to Canada and we taught a school up there with a girlfriend of mine that I actually rode Bronx with in Texas. And me and her co-instructed a school there. And it was a huge hit. Them girls were awesome. They were gritty, tough. They got horses rode. They really stepped up and showed me that this is actually possible. Like, there's actually women out there who will listen, who do want to try this, but they didn't have the right avenue to get involved. Like me, I just entered a rodeo and went at it and made so many mistakes, but I've never went to a school, you know? And so then after that Canada rodeo, I actually started doing my research and put together this business and started organizing schools. And now I've taught 300 women in a year and a half how to ride a bucking horse. Wow. Some of them don't ever ride again, which is fine, but they went to a school, they learned the basics, they learned the safety procedures. They learned about the horsemanship side of things when it comes to bucking horses, and they rode their first bronc safely. Nobody's gotten hurt. And now it's just kind of taken off. But this is why I wanted to create these schools, because there's no avenue for these girls to go learn. They either have to go to a rodeo and figure it out and learn the wrong way. They get hurt, break an arm, don't ever do it again. Then we just kill that potential. We just ruin that potential versus going to a school, learning all the basics and doing it safely. Then you just lit that fire, and then it's up to them to keep that flame going. So that's how I got this kind of started. It was slow going and I fought against it for a long time, but these girls are proving me wrong big time.
Yeah. I mean, that's amazing. Cause I think there's a whole misconception about ag in general that you kind of have to grow up around it to be in it. Right. And it's really, really hard to get into it. And for rodeo, if you don't have the backing, like you were talking about before, it can be really challenging. So that's incredible to be able to offer a space for women, especially to be able to kind of get into it. And like you said, to try it out, they want to do it once, great. And then have the school be a learning potential for them to maybe go and take it further. So that's incredible.
It makes me sound bad that I didn't want to do this for a while, but, and then I figured if somebody's like, because there is a demand for this, like big time right now, like there's so many girls that want to learn how to do this, but they don't know where to go. They don't know what equipment to get. They don't know what saddles to ride in. And half the battle is your equipment. They get this junk equipment. And that's the biggest thing for me is safety. And I'm like, you're trusting your equipment to keep you safe on a bucking horse that could hurt you, but you're not riding in quality gear. And so that's a whole nother conversation. But the biggest thing is these schools, like they're just, this is the stuff that they needed and they're craving it. And my schools fill up within 2 days. I don't have to beg girls to enter it. I mean, I have an overflow of entries right now.
What's the coolest thing that you've seen from, because your schools, are they 3 days long?
I make them 2 days.
Okay. Yeah. 2 days. So, you know, from, or maybe, you know, even if you have an example of a change that you've seen in somebody who's shown up to your school, maybe they've never ridden a bronc or maybe a couple here and there. Do you kind of see a difference when they leave your school after that second day?
I do. I've had some girls that have rode before that come to my school that learn things about their form and their body position that actually really helps change the way that they ride, or I change up their saddles, or saddles aren't helping them at all. It really affects the way that they're riding. You know, their bronc reins, maybe some of them are too big for their hands and they weren't realizing that because they didn't understand why they kept letting go of their bronc reins. All these little tiny things, they really do add up and affect how you ride. And riding the bronc should be the easiest, funnest part. You shouldn't have to fight your equipment and stuff like that. You should just be able to trust that your equipment's going to keep you safe and hold up and not explode. And then you can just ride your bronc and have fun. You know what I mean? So I've had a lot of girls change up those little things, and it really changes how they ride down the road too.
Yeah. And I'm sure, you know, their confidence level just goes up after being at your school and everything that they've learned. And I'm sure that's really cool to see as an instructor too.
The biggest thing is, the biggest problem I get with girls that come to my school after they ride here and there or go to other school is the chute procedure. That is the most stressful part of riding a bronc, is being fast, getting your horse saddled, getting on and getting out. And so that's where most of the confidence comes from, is teaching everything behind the chutes, because how to saddle it properly, how to be fast and efficient and smooth. And so that's probably my number one takeaway from these schools is the chute procedure, being fast and not getting stressed out back there. Because then when they're stressed out, they're not thinking about riding their bronc, and then they end up getting bucked off, and then it's a waste of your time, travel, money, and stuff like that. And then it makes it no fun, and then they don't want to ride anymore. So if they get confident about how to saddle properly and stuff like that, they can focus that energy on actually riding and competing and winning.
Yeah. Is there some advice that you give to women who want to get into bronc riding, or even just in agriculture in general? You know, kind of just going back to, sometimes it can be really hard if you didn't grow up around it, or if you don't have the support system around you. So what would be some good advice to women who are like, I know I really want to do this, but I don't even know where to start, or I don't even know where to go or what to do?
As far as the rodeo goes and and riding ranch broncs specifically, or even if they want to ride saddle bronc, definitely go to a school to learn the basics first, because there's nothing crappier than trying to go to a rodeo and it's your first time and nobody's really kind of there to help you. And then you're getting all stressed out and not knowing what to do. It makes it a really bad experience. So if you go to a school and get your confidence built, then you'll have the tools and the knowledge to go off on your own and start competing on your own. Because I mean, I didn't grow up doing any of this. I didn't ride a bronc till I was 21. So, and then as far as the ag world goes, I mean, I didn't grow up on a ranch either. Everything that I know and that I learned is from bouncing around different jobs. Like, hey, I'll do this for a couple of months. And, you know, cause I always got hired on seasonally. I was never really allowed to work full time at a ranch. And so I moved around a lot, but it allowed me to learn different methods, different things that people do. Every ranch is different in the way they operate. And so it sucked, but it was also good for me too. But you just got to try and ask and do all the research you can and figure it out from there. But, yeah.
Yeah. No, that's incredible. I think a lot of the barriers that people might have, and especially, you know, now that there seems to be this barrier that, okay, well, like I said, you know, you didn't grow up doing it, or, you know, I don't have a support system, so I don't even know where to go or what to do. But if you really have that goal and that mindset, then you're willing to go wherever it takes you, like you did, you know, move around the country, do stuff for free, you know, learn and really put your mind towards it. Because in leaving out all the negativity, like you said, and having that, like, almost like that narrow, or, you know, that one track mind to your goal and just pushing out all of the other mud and muck.
Right. And I mean, and networking too, like, you're never going to get anywhere unless you talk to people, unless you ask questions, unless you network. You might work for this ranch for 3 months and you might think it's not going to get you anywhere, but then word of mouth will take you and your reputation and your character farther than you think it does. It's the same in rodeo too. Rodeo is such a small world. Everybody knows everybody in rodeo, and how you act and behave in rodeo carries you on to the next one, and so on and so on. And it's the same with agriculture and trying to ranch too. The ranching community is a small world as well. And word of mouth will carry you on. And as long as you stick to your character and your morals and your values, your reputation will increase every single year, but you have to build on it. It's like a pyramid. You lay out your foundation and you stick with it. Eventually, over the years, it'll start getting to the point where you don't have to try to prove yourself anymore. Your character and your reputation will stand for itself.
Yeah. You know, for agriculture in general, it is really small, and word of mouth and networking it's kind of who you know and the people that can kind of help you along the way. So what are you currently working on? I want to talk a little bit about your upcoming clinics, and do you have, for your ranch bronc riding school, do you have bigger plans, bigger goals for it? What's your goal for that school there?
So my plan is I'm trying to buy my own place. Because that's how before I could get all these schools started, I was like, oh, maybe I'll just buy my own place and build an arena and just have an annual school at my home. And it's taking me longer than I'd like to be able to financially get my life in order to purchase land and a home and stuff like that. But that's my ultimate 10-year goal, hopefully less, is to get my own place and actually host a practice and a school at my own home. But for now, I'm just bouncing around all over the states. I try to do a different place every spring. I'm only able to do schools in the spring because that's when I have more time and availability to leave, because I need one day to travel, 2 days for the school, and one day to go home. So every time I do a school, it's 4 days off, essentially. But right now, this is my second year teaching. And every place is different every single year. And it's like I said, there's a huge demand. So it's increasing. I have twice as many schools this year as I did last year. But I've got Nebraska's next weekend. And then in April, I'll be in Idaho, Washington, Texas. And then in May, I'll be in France and Ontario, Canada. So I would like to try to do fall schools, but that's when I get super busy at work. And so I don't have the time to take off. So I only have to cram it all in the spring, which is fine for me. But also in August, I guess I will be going to Australia for 2 weeks too, and hoping to get a clinic taught down there on a weekend. It's still quite a ways away, so we haven't worked out details yet, but the flight's booked.
That's so awesome. Yeah. Have you been to Australia before?
No, I haven't actually. Yeah. And I'm just about it. It's going to be the longest I've ever left all my critters. So I'm really nervous about being gone that long, but I can't not take advantage of that opportunity. So just have to do it.
Yeah. Is it on like a working ranch or?
Just going with some rodeo friends of mine and a couple girls that going to enter a few rodeos, and they're going to show me around and just kind of. We're going to organize a little clinic while I'm there too. So just like a one day type thing. So yeah, it's still a ways away. We haven't figured out all the details yet, but there's a demand for it down there too. Like, they don't have access to the knowledge like we do here in the States. As far as ranch broncs go, like, not saying like they have a great rodeo with bareback and saddle bronc and bull riding, but ranch broncs specifically is where it's still pretty new, and especially women's ranch bronc riding.
And actually, you know what, just for the listeners that might not know, what is the difference between saddle bronc and ranch bronc, just to kind of give a good clarification there? No, you're good.
Saddle bronc riding is the perfected and modified ranch bronc riding. So ranch broncs are your everyday working saddle. You can ride with a rope, a night latch, or you can freehand. You can do whatever you want. It just has to be your normal everyday saddle on a bucking horse. Saddle bronc riding came around in the early 1900s, and where they cut off the horn. You know, they started changing up the stirrup leather so they can reach higher up into the horse to spur on him. Everything was a competition with cowboys back then, everything. So eventually ranch bronc modified into a saddle bronc saddle. And saddle bronc is the perfected art form of ranch bronc riding. That's why it's so common and popular right now. It's the stereotypical bronc riding event, saddle bronc riding, but it's a modified tree. Everything's different. Where the rigging sits on a saddle bronc saddle, like the rules, all everything is different.
Okay. Yeah, that's great. Thank you. I didn't know some of that stuff. So thanks for clearing that up. So thank you so much for coming on. I really appreciate it. Where can people find you? How can people support you?
Pretty much any social media, Facebook, Instagram. Facebook is my Bronc School Facebook page, Western Women's Ranch Bronc. And then my Instagram is just my personal page, but I post a lot of stuff there too. And then I use TikTok for videos from the schools and stuff to kind of show off the girls and their writing. And but yeah, pretty well any social media.
Cool. Awesome. And yeah, I'll put that in the show notes too. I feel like this question is asked a lot, but I always love to ask it. What is the best piece of advice that you've ever been given?
Oh, crap.
I know, I should have prepared you for that question. Sorry.
I don't know. I don't know if it's the best, but it's my favorite piece of advice that I actually got from Kayla Muscle. She's a Canadian saddle bronc rider, like a female saddle bronc rider. And I've followed her story on and off too. She told me to not carry all the negativity, all the, you know, getting bucked off and the feeling sad for yourself, not to carry that to the next rodeo. Like, you're allowed to be mad at yourself. And if you're super competitive, like I am, I used to carry that with me everywhere I went. Like, and then I would just continually stop doing good. I would just get worse and worse and make all these little mistakes that I know better. She told me, you're allowed to be mad at yourself all night long, all day, whatever. But as soon as you go to bed and you wake up, that's it. You're done. You can't think about it anymore. You have to move on and do better and stop thinking about it. And that took a lot of mental practice to get that way, but it is possible. So now I don't carry it with me anymore. It's done as soon as I go to sleep.
That can apply to everyday life too. Right. You know, I mean, you put tomorrow behind you and you focus on today and what's ahead.
You know? Yep. And it's not some, you know, that you can ever, like, you have to let yourself be mad and think about it and go through all the emotions. You're allowed to be upset and pissed at yourself and do all those things, but it's not just dismissing it or shutting it away. Like, you're allowed to go through all those emotions. You have to, right? But the difference is carrying it with you. So you got to get it all out, throw your tantrum, you know, let all your emotions out. And then when you wake up, you have to have a different mindset, like, all right, let's do better kind of thing. But everyone is always so quick to dismiss the negative emotions and like, no, you can go through it. You can let them out. Like, that's normal. It's actually healthy, right. But don't be so quick to dismiss the negative stuff. You got to let it out first.
I love that you said that too, because you're right. I think that a lot of us, and we want to just stuff it down or just not think about it, and you don't heal from it. And then you end up carrying it around with you because it will pop up somewhere else in your life, maybe 2 days from then or 5 years down the road, you know? So working through those emotions are so important too.
You do subconsciously carry a lot of negative stuff with you if you never deal with it in the moment and let it out. Like, it's normal to let it out, but you can't just be quick to dismiss it or it's going to hurt you later down the road.
Yeah. Well, great, Brittany. Thank you so much. This was such an awesome interview. Thank you for coming on when you were sick. I really appreciate it. And thank you for everything you're doing in agriculture. I mean, you're an incredible role model and everything that you're doing for women and Bronx. We can't wait to see where you go from here. So thank you again. It was great to talk to you.